further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, Linton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones. Oh, wait a minute. It's just the two of us, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Should we do it?
Yes.
All right, let's go back. Let's do it. Let's do it old school.
Yes. You feel me
if you live it. Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you're an art maker, art taker, art faker, or art partaker, welcome all, because of course all are welcome to Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I'm here with a woman who is so woke, she broke woke. It's Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton.
Good morning, Leslie.
Oh, it's been a whirlwind weekend.
A weekend of whirls and winds.
Yes, yes, because I can announce it on the radio now. I'm going to be a grandma.
I'm sure the radio was waiting with bated breath.
They were. I know they were.
To hear that.
Yeah, so I'm going to be a grandma, and so my daughter came and spent the weekend with me, and we hung out and did girl things and, you know, talked about babies and, you know, how her life is about to alter for all time. But it was great. It was fun. We had a lot of girl time. You know. Got her hair done, and you know.
So I can call you Granny from here on out?
No, you cannot call me Granny. I'm going to be called Mimi.
That, no, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes,
that's like some white person BS.
No, it's not.
Nana, poo poo, BB, Mimi, Papa DB. No. That's some like no.
I'm gonna be called
real
Mimi.
Real people. And
the reason I'm gonna be called Mimi.
Just accept
is
grandma
because
or grandpa.
Is because one of my great-grandmother's names was Mimi, so that's what I'm being
called. Yeah, but you're not your great-grandmother. Just embrace the role.
I am embracing the role, and I'm going to be called Mimi.
That's so...
It was her idea.
Oh, my God.
It was her idea.
So it's a bad idea.
Well, but it's hers and not yours, so...
And yet still a bad idea.
You know what? You just want to be able to call me grandma. That's what that is.
I'm still able to call you grandma.
Yes.
And whatever ridiculous, childlike, infantilized pet name you choose for yourself.
Wow.
Does it change
There's a lot of mansplaining going on right now.
No, it's not mansplaining. There's no mansplaining about it.
There's a lot of like toxic masculinity coming from this side
please.
Of the room right now. And it's making
please,
me feel
Mimi.
A little, I don't know, I'm feeling a little weird. Is there a spray? I need some like bleach or something to like spray that corner. Clean it out.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
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 Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can call me grandma. You might get hit afterwards, but you can call me that.
Worth it.
Okay. I hit hard. You know, I've been taking boxing lessons. Anyway. Yes, let's get to our guest today. An entire show with these beautiful people, Bob Button and Jerry Shermer, here to talk about Ragtime. Bob, the producer, and Jerry, one of the dramaturgs, right?
Yes.
One of three. You guys are working hard on this sucker.
We're working really hard.
This is a really big show.
Yes.
It's a cast of 31. It's a crew of 35, a band of 4. It's one of the largest productions Live Arts has ever done.
So, why three dramaturgs? Let's start there.
Actually, before that, let's start with what is a dramaturg, just in case.
Thank you, Clint. When I tell people I've been working on the production of Ragtime, they say, oh, what are you doing? And I said, I'm one of the dramaturges. And they're like, great.
What's that?
Blank stare. And I said, do you know what a dramaturge does? And they go, no. So a dramaturge is basically the agent of the playwright. They help the playwright explain to the director, to the actors, to the rest of the production company,
right?
The context in which the play was written, both historical, social, emotional, psychological, and they put it in its place so that the production that is the current production has a chance to incorporate that, represent that, push against that if necessary, or include it.
Okay.
And because the story of Ragtime begins as three distinct groups that become intertwined through the course of the show,
right?
We thought perhaps we could have each one of those distinct voices be elucidated and be explained and get their context so that the cast knows who they're representing and in what time they are being represented.
Ah. And again, speaking of context, let's take a step back just in case there are listeners who don't know. Ragtime the Musical, based on
the book, right?
Based on the novel by E.L. And we're having a so we'll ask people if they want to chime in on our Facebook page the correct pronunciation. I've always heard it E.L. Doctorow.
And I've always thought it was E.L. Doctorow.
But I also think
we have a huge university in town. Someone's got to
know that.
But I think we also need to give direct credit to the people who actually wrote the musical. That is Terrence McNally, who wrote the book, Stephen Flaherty, the music, and Lynn Ahrens, the lyrics, who translated Doctorow's incredibly interesting book into one of the most lush and timely musicals ever produced.
Right, and Doctorow's book is a tome. It's
It's not that large, and it's actually a very fast read, but it covers massive amounts of territory.
It's this moment at the turn of the last century,
yes,
in America, where we're looking at America at that time from a racial viewpoint, from an ethnic viewpoint, from an economic viewpoint, about the cracks and how they were. Basically, how they were all those features were like glaciers coming in and banging against each other.
Jerry talked about three groups, and Clinton picked up on that. But I think maybe if we could define the groups a little bit, that would help.
Do that.
The white group is represented by a family in New Rochelle, New York. But it's a diverse family. Father is a racist. Mother is a traditional wife at the turn of the century, but who is uneasy and questioning some of the things happening in society. The younger brother of the wife is radically becomes radicalized over the show as he sees what's happening in the culture around him. And then on the other side of this white divide, we have the Irish immigrant fire chief who is pulled down by his fight with the growing black culture for survival in society.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got the black culture, in this case centered on a jazz pianist, an educated jazz pianist named Colehouse, who has all dreams possible for a black man until they're not, because of what happens to his girlfriend, to his lover. And then we've got the immigrants, the new immigrants, the Latvian immigrants that are coming over not so much because they want to be in America, but because they cannot stand the conditions at home. And frankly, this sounds a lot like not only America at the turn of the last century, but America and Charlottesville today.
Right now, yes. Yes, exactly. So you had one dramaturg looking at the time period in New Rochelle and in Harlem, right?
That's correct. That's Michael Swanberg. And Shelby Edwards is a graduate student right now living in Chicago.
Yes.
But she will be, she has done the dramaturgy on the black experience in Harlem,
mm-hmm.
and what the conditions were in 1906.
Right.
And I have the pleasure of doing the immigrant story, and with particular focus on Jewish immigrants leaving the Pale Settlement,
right,
which is the western section of Russia that was a contained area in which Jews were allowed to live and not beyond. Mm-hmm. So when you hear the phrase, that's beyond the pale, that's where that phrase comes from. See how smart dramaturges are?
Wow.
They get the stuff. And Lafayette was part of the Pale of Settlement. And during the time that this... during the time frame of when Tata was leaving, Tata is the name of the character, the Jewish immigrant character,
right?
Which Doctorow has done a couple of winks at the audience. One of the winks he does is with Tata's name.
Mm-hmm.
So my first point of dramaturgy with the cast was to let them know that the word Tata means father in Yiddish. So it's not a proper name. It's his title.
And
right, because I don't think any of the main characters in the I'm not sure about the novel, but in the play, almost none of the main characters, except for Colehouse Walker
and his friend Sarah
and his lover mother of his child.
The
Sarah.
Child of the family in Neuchâtel is named Edgar.
Edgar, but most characters just have titles.
This is correct, and yes. This is one of the areas of debate amongst people who have read the book and all the great scholars who have taken a look at this Pulitzer Prize-winning book and play to see what was his reason for that. And
right.
The author would not answer that. He lets you all figure that out.
So what did you guys come up with as the answer to that?
Oh, I wouldn't presume, Leslie, to tell an actor
right
what his name is and why his name is that. That's got to be their journey.
So, but nice. do we know what the decision was for anyone?
Do you know, Bob?
I think that the major decision was that the three families called without specific names are meant to represent all people from those cultures rather than individual identifiable people.
Okay.
Now, on the other hand, the show is full of famous people from that period.
Yes.
From J.P. Morgan to Henry Ford.
To Evelyn Nesbitt.
To
Harry Houdini.
Emma Goldman.
Aye.
Booker T. Washington.
Right.
The period comes in and out of the story being told throughout.
Right. So as dramaturg,
yes.
What was the most interesting thing you found out? Like the thing that you weren't expecting to find, or that gave you insight that like excited you to the point where like, oh my God, the cast has to know this.
Because I was directed on doing just one part, one third of this story, Tata's story is my family story, and that is why I was attracted to doing this.
Right.
My grandmother arrived almost probably, could have been on the same ship.
Oh, wow.
And she was my only grandparent that I knew well, and she told me the story of the day she left Ellis Island and walked down the street with a piece of paper trying to find where she was supposed to go to meet a relative. Aww. And it must have been Halloween because it was a young boy came up behind her with a sock full of chalk and hit her over the head with it. So she was covered in white and didn't know why and said she was ready to turn around and go back on the boat. And there is a custom in that area. I grew up in New Jersey, in which Halloween or the night before you go out and do mischief. So
yes.
She was there on mischief night.
Oh.
So she had this piece of paper that said, and she didn't know how to read
right.
it because it was a foreign language to her.
Right.
And she kept going to people, I need Rivington. And finally someone looked at the paper and said, you want Rivington Street.
Yeah.
Which was one of the main thoroughfares in the Lower East Side where Jewish immigrants lived.
Yeah.
So this is a very personal story for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've found several sources that described in length what the journey was like, what Ellis Island was like,
mm-hmm.
and what it was like to live in New York City at the turn of the century. And one of my sources, just for personal information, was my visit to the Tenement Museum in the Lower East Side in Manhattan, which, if anyone's going to New York, is a must-see. Because
wait, so tell me about it, because I didn't. This is news. I didn't realize there was a Tenement Museum.
It's fabulous, and I'm sorry I can't tell you the street, but that's an easy search. They have three different apartments set up as they would have been during the heyday of the immigrant population.
Whoa.
It could have been Chinatown or Little Italy or Italy or Hell's Kitchen, which was where more of the Irish lived. But they, the apartment that I went into, there was three of them, and you go up. It was December, so it was cold. It was dark because we were the last tour to go up. And you open up a door and you walk into a hallway, a staircase, in which I could barely see where I was going.
Oh, wow.
So I got to feel what it was like to live there. And you go up these stairs and you go into an apartment and you see 12 setups for people doing handwork for the garment industry, which was one of the major industries, especially for Jews who came over at that time.
Right.
And you got to just be there for a while in the dark, in the cold, knowing these people were working 11-hour days, making, you know, 6 cents a piece. And there is two other, I believe there are two other apartments, buildings that you go into for a slightly different experience. But it's worth the time to go.
Wow.
So this is what I wanted to share with the cast.
Yeah.
They're not just singing and dancing. This was the life that most of these people in the story were living.
Right.
Unless you were living in your shell.
Right. Wow. All right. Well, we're going to take a break and pay a bill or half a bill. And we'll be right back on Homegrown.
This is local author Adriana Anders, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
18 minutes past the hour.
18 minutes past the hour, and if you're just joining us, where the heck have you been?
Stop yelling at the listeners.
I can yell at the listeners all I want.
Stop yelling at the listeners.
You know, where have you been? Where have you been? We've been here for 18 minutes. Set an alarm,
you
people.
Can come and go whenever you want to.
See, I'm...
Just attend the show.
Yeah, see, he's the nice parent. He's the one that wants to be everybody's
cop,
friend. And yeah, and I'm the bad cop. I'm just like, no, there are certain things that are unacceptable. All right. But we're here with Bob Button and Jerry Shermer talking about Ragtime, which opens Live Arts October 5th and closes on October 27th. So we've been talking about the dramaturgy that's been involved in creating the life of the show. So this is not a regular, like, happy-go-lucky musical. Like, this is a very deep story.
One of my favorite stories about Ragtime, which I had seen the original production on Broadway and loved, fell in love with forever. But I was later talking to a friend of mine who had been to see another production of the show, and he told me he hated it.
Really?
He said, I go to a theater to escape for light entertainment. I don't want to have to think in the theater. And this is a thinking person's show.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's interesting to me how many people have done this show and have not put as much emphasis on the thinking part. I mean, yes, it has lighter moments. You know, it has its...
Baseball game.
Yeah, the baseball game, exactly. Like, but it is...
I basically sleep through the whole first act until the baseball game at the beginning of the second.
The word.
And then I read my program until the end of the show.
You know... That's,
and I have a wonderful time.
No one wanted to know that, Glenn.
I would say that is an untrue statement. I can't imagine anyone sleeping through the beauty of the music and the emotion of the finale of the first act.
Well,
it is quite beautiful.
And the music is really complicated. I mean, the music is, I mean, it's Ragtime, right? It's jazz, which when you hear it doesn't seem like it's complicated, but singing it is different.
It's also a really emotional music.
Yeah.
It connects to the passions, the anger, the frustrations, the problems that these people are going to in telling the story.
One mention about Ragtime. I was looking over Shelby's dramaturgy before I came in so that I could speak to the work that she had done on this. And one of the lines in the opening song, the song called Ragtime, is the word syncopation, which is in the music, the line is giving the nation a new syncopation. And the definition of syncopation is breaking the rhythm. It's a deviant pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a metaphor for pretty much the journey of just about everybody in this play.
Oh, yeah.
The play is about breaking the norm mm-hmm. and finding a new pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the playwrights and the story is in sync. And if, you know, you don't want to think, don't come see the show. But these are some things for the audience to be aware of. There are a lot of subtle, in addition to many overt, references to, and what do you think about what's going on?
Right.
And that is something that you could see this play 2, 3, 4 times
mm-hmm.
and find something else to walk out of the theater going, wow, I had never really thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean for me now?
For me, right, right. And I think the choice for Live Arts to do this play at this time is following in a train that a lot of art is going in. You know, it's the train of, you know what, this is not the World War II era where we go to laugh and forget about our life. This is where we go to see someone else's journey and have a window into someone else's journey in a safe space, in a place where we can observe and process it and not be defensive about learning it.
I also think that it really fits into the goals for Live Arts in this full season.
Mm.
There is diverse kinds of content, kinds of shows. There's certainly light, funny, magical kinds of shows. There are, but one of the things that Bree Luck, who's the producing artistic director, had as a goal for this season was to develop the voices of the people, female voices, minority voices,
yes.
that are not always told in the theater,
yes.
and to make sure they are heard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a focus on that diversity for the whole season.
Yeah, and I think that has been that's been like one of the most refreshing things. You know, when we did the season reveal,
mm-hmm.
I think that's something that really came through, and I think a lot of people in town were really happy to see Live Arts getting back to really its roots of being the
forging
community and theater, and you know, and being that kind of pushing the edge, you know, like, you know, that nudge to people that it started out to be.
Also, I think when we're talking about that, we need to look at the fact that this is one of the most diverse companies Live Arts has ever assembled,
mm-hmm.
on stage and off.
Yeah.
We look at the racial mix, the ethnic mix on stage, but it's reflected in the people producing the show. We look at the age range. The youngest member of the cast is 10. The oldest member of the company, which is me, is 78. The oldest actors, and there are 3 of them, at 66. So we've got a huge age range. We've got a cast that reflects America and the community,
yeah.
Charlottesville, putting on this show.
Wow. And that is different from a lot of community theater that's done here. So,
it was a very deliberate choice,
yeah.
on Bree's part.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have to do a list of things that's going on. And it's long. It's long, so we're gonna take a little break from the interview.
Would you like me to cut down the list?
No, I don't want you to cut down the list. Why would I want you to cut down the list?
You just,
I need
just,
everyone
poof.
To know all of the amazing things that go on artistically in this town.
Are there amazing things going on artistically in this
of
town?
Of course there are. Our little hamlet is always buzzing.
I don't believe you. It's such a small town. What could possibly be going on artistically
well,
in this town?
Well, let me tell you, okay? Just some of the artistic events happening this week. A special note, tomorrow, voter registration at the Northside branch of the Madison Regional Library from 4 to 6. And always remember, voter suppression techniques can remove you from the rolls without you being notified. So you can always confirm that you're still registered by calling the city registrar. Make that phone call. Vote.
Vote.
People. Can't get up early enough for the start of the show, but vote! All right. Currently running January 27th, Reflections, Native Art Across Generations, an exhibition of the work of several contemporary Native American artists at UVA's Fralin Art Museum. Yes, darling, take a trip to the Fralin Art Museum. Currently running December 8th. Through the December 8th, the American Shakespeare Center runs its summer fall season with four plays. Emma Whipday's adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma, George Etheridge's The Man of Mode or Sir Flopling Flutter, and Richard III and As You Like It by Shakespeare. Tonight, UVA Drama Department presents Broadway Talks Back at the University Chapel with Soleil Pfeiffer, Eliza Hamilton in the touring production of Hamilton, talking about what it's like to be a professional actor.
Oh my.
October 3rd, Lewis Nelson and Claudrina, editors of Charlottesville 2017, The Legacy of Race and Inequity, and Haas Spencer, the author of Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, all talk about their books at the UVA bookstore mezzanine. Oh, and those are awesome books and awesome authors. Go see that. Also on the 3rd, Swing Seville invites you to learn the Lindy Hop at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Yeah, hope you're in shape to do that, because that dance is hard. The 3rd and the 4th, my birthday. UVA Drama Department presents a stage reading in the UVA Helms Theater of The Niceties, a play about a black student and her liberal white professor meeting to discuss the former's paper about slavery's role in the American Revolution. And that's directed by Kevin. Hey, Kevin, what's up? Kevin Minor, for those of you who don't know. The 3rd through the 7th, an evening of one-act plays by David Ives at the Mary Baldwin University Fletcher Collins Theater in Deming Hall in Stanton. On the 4th, UVA MFA Reading Series presents a special alumni reading event with Erica Meitner, Hannah Pittard, and Mary Ann Simon at the UVA Bookstore Mezzanine. The regular UVA MFA Reading Series continues with the students Sean Shearer and Juan E. Suarez reading from their work at New Dominion Bookshop. Lana Guerra teaches you to make crude Frankenstein monster marionette puppets. That's a quote. At Second Street Gallery, on the 5th, First Fridays offers art exhibits and openings in spaces in and around downtown. We have Jane Skafta.
I think it's Skafta.
Skafta presents her drawings about the effects of climate change at New Dominion Bookshop. Michael Doyle presents Michael Doyle drawings from jail at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. June Calmer and Aiden Mills present Embodying a New Narrative, a visual discussion. Works by Aaron Farrington, Will Kerner, and Rochelle Summer at the McGuffey Art Center. Also on the 5th, First Friday's Improv by Big Blue Door at the McGuffey Art Center.
Big Blue Door.
Hey, Joel, what's going on? On the 6th, Andrea Karotke presents an invitation to weaving at the central branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. And for your musical options this week.
For your musical options this week today, the Charlottesville Symphony Orchestra plays Sibelius' Second Symphony at the Market. Market Luthen. That is the most complex spoonerism that I have ever done. The Market Luthen.
No, hey.
I believe, contrary to popular belief, that's pronounced the Martin Luther King Jr. Performing Arts Center today from 3:30 to 5 o'clock. Tonight, Help Me Helen at James River Brewery. Tonight, also Travis Elliott at Rapture. Tomorrow, All Ages Open Mic at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. October 2nd, it's the Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. Pianist Bob Huntington is at Fellini's The Lua Project. Oh, our friends Lua from October 3rd at October 3rd at the Shebeen Pub and Bry. Also at October 3rd, Leslie Gourdet heads LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar. October 4th, the first half-hour noontime concert in the 5th Annual Organ and Carillon Concert Series presents Made in America, works by Dudley Buck, Daniel Goffop, and others at Christ Episcopal Church, downtown Christ Episcopal Church, giving us more noontime concerts throughout October on Thursdays.
Well, that's lovely.
It's so lovely. It's a lovely experience. October 4th, Larissa and the Illusionistics at Rapture. Also on the 4th, Lips and Lawn at Dirty Nelly's. At the 5th, the Rhythmic Soul section Sputnik performs with singer Yolanda Jones at the Hardywood Pilot Brewery and Tap Room. Don't tell us that we never did anything for you, Yolanda. We did you the shout out. October 5th, Bob Bennett Benetta at Fellini's. Classic pop, rock, and soul from South Canal Street at Bold Rock Cidery. Choose your own adventure at the Whiskey Jar. Also on the 5th, Positive Collective throws down another punky reggae party at the Front Porch Roots Music School. On the 6th, the Telemetry Experimental Music Series continues with the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative with Chris Carlson, Nulset, and Omar Frey. October 6th also, the Free Fall Music and Art Festival continues also with the Ruidosa Women's Music Festival at the Ix Art Park featuring, get this.
Okay.
Get this.
All right, hold on.
Angelica Garcia.
Uh-huh.
Harley in the House of Juniper.
What?
Choose Your Own Adventure. Butterfly Vendetta.
Hey!
And Shagwolf.
Oh my God.
Done.
That is going to be a powerhouse concert.
Done.
Oh my God.
The only thing that could make that more interesting is that you have to choose between that and last week's guest, Nathaniel Starr, with Nathaniel Starr and Kim Polk playing the Front Porch Roots Music School.
Oh, that's a hard choice. You
we
know
can't
what?
Help you do, choose. We can just do, tell you what the options are.
Do half and half. Go half and half. That's what you need to do.
It's the Fred Flintstone thing. You do one, and then you run across the street,
yes,
and do the other, and
yes,
you run back and do
and
the other.
And you run back and do the other. That's what you have to do.
Just make sure Wilma doesn't find out.
Hey.
All you kids, Google that reference. Just Google it. You'll find it. October 6th, Jen Talon, the Husband at the Hardywood Brewery and Tap Room, Luca Dora at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, DJ Groovematic, of course, at Rapture. Every Sunday, it's Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School in Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, their weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Where else? Right in the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar, the ATM Unit at Rapture, and the Songwriter Night at the local every Tuesday. It's the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. Every Wednesday, it's the open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. The open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo. Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9. DJ and Friends at the Bebedero. Bachata Fusion at the Ix Art Park. The 502 Fossils at the Shapine Pub and Bry. And, of course, the guys, the dudes, the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Thursday, it's our lovely friends Lua at the Bebedero. And, of course, every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
John Durth. With the John Durth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while when you need a frown or need a smile, you just got to come down to Durth.
Woo!
And those are just some.
That's a long list, man.
You're right. There are artistic and wonderful artistic events
in
our little hamlet of a town.
I don't know why you didn't believe me.
Have
I ever lied to you?
I stand directed. That's what I stand.
All right. All right. We'll be right back here on Homegrown. We're going to pay a bill.
Hi, I'm Jesse Conover.
And I'm Marjorie Ruderman.
We're with Feminine Hijinks, local improv group from Big Blue Door.
And this is Homegrown, your show about local art.
On 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
One of the things.
34 minutes past the hour.
34? Oh my God, it's almost over. What will we do?
34.
Whatever will we do?
And you're listening to Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. Stay tuned afterwards, of course, for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. But before that, we're going to return to our guest, Jerry Shermer and Bob Button,
yes,
dramaturg and producer, respectively, for Live Art's upcoming production of Ragtime. So we've talked about what a huge show this is, and we sort of brushed on it, but I want to formally put it out: why this show? Why now?
Mm. I think there's multiple reasons for selecting this show. One, Live Arts loves to do musicals that are challenging, at least one each year, and this is a challenging show.
Mm.
It also fits into Bree's concern for developing an understanding of diversity in the theater, and this is as diverse as we can get, as mentioned before. But and I think when it was planned, I don't think we even contemplated what was going to happen in Charlottesville in the last year, going back to last August 12th,
yeah,
and what was going to take place and affect this community for the year and more following. But this is, at its core, not a show all about diversity, but about the healing that takes place as we come to understand each other. Mm. And that's essential in the society in which we live, that we explore what life is like for those who are not in our own family.
Yes.
And I think this is the time to do this show. I can't imagine it being done at a more appropriate time.
Right. And I can't imagine a more perfect person to direct it than Ike Anderson. Ike actually came to me when Bree asked him to direct it because he was in the middle of directing Joe Turner. and he was like, I don't know. Like, I can't. Like, I'm just getting this show up. Like, I don't know. That's a lot. And blah, blah, blah. And I said to him, well, Ike, if you don't do it, who's going to? I mean, who else?
One of my jobs as producer is to work with the director, to support the director. And Ike and I have kind of developed a pattern of weekly talks mm-hmm. about where are you going, what's happening, mm-hmm. what... I certainly can't tell him how to direct because that's not my background or my skill. But as a longtime stage manager, I've had a lot of experience in management.
Right.
So a lot of our conversations have been directed to how can we make this production happen in an organizational way.
Right.
And I think that he is also supported by Adrian Oliver,
yes.
who is a fantastic developing director in her own right.
Right.
And they make an incredible team mm-hmm. as they bounce ideas off each other. But it's not just the two of them. We've got a team of designers, a team of tech people who are bringing their vision to life. So, mm-hmm. I mean, when we talk about this company, there's at least 35 people working behind the scenes
right.
to make it happen. And that's Ike's job as director, is to bring all those elements together.
Yeah.
I think it was really important for Ike to do this play at this point in time, given the climate of our community over the last year and a half. You know, he's talked a lot at our production meetings that the audience needs to leave the theater with a possible tying up that the playwrights do
yeah.
to end it on a hopeful note.
Right.
But not to be able to easily dismiss the pain, the debasement and degradation
yeah.
that we see occur
yeah.
During the course of the play. And I think, you know, that has been a balancing act
mm-hmm.
for both Ike and Adrian and the rest of the production staff to be sure that those elements are in balance
right.
so the audience has a powerful experience.
But not a demoralizing one. Yeah.
Not a destructive one,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
you know, one in which is a gut check
mm-hmm.
and then, okay, step forward. Now what?
Right.
And that's what our hope the conversation will be as people leave the theater.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's been really awesome to see him go through this directorial process. I mean, for those of you who know Ike, like, you know, he's that jovial guy, right? He's always, whenever you see him, he's got this huge smile with those cute little dimples. And, you know, you just can't.
He's adorable.
And his happiness is infectious. But during this process, there's been a new seriousness about him, a new, you know, he's really grown.
He's purpose driven right now.
Yeah. And he's been so on task and so focused. And I can't wait to see what he's put together because I know what happens when Ike gets that focused and that determined on something, it always comes out absolutely amazing. So mm-hmm. I'm so excited.
This is really the critical week in bringing
right.
this show to reality. Today is Tech Sunday,
right.
which is a rehearsal from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
starting with the cues for lights and sound and bringing in costumes and then running the show with all the tech in place by the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
Of timing all this out so that it works. there are two runs, and then there's a preview, and then there's a fundraiser, and then opening night on Friday. It is, that's why you've got the producer and the dramaturg here today, is that the people who are making the magic happen are at the theater getting ready for
this
day.
I counter that because I think the producer and the dramaturg are just as responsible for making the magic happen anybody else. I mean, I think, you know, as you've been talking, it takes a lot of people and a lot of different people in a lot of different roles to do a piece of theater. And there's, you know, there's certainly nothing less valid about talking. And I think there's something even more necessary to talk about people who are behind the scenes.
Yes.
And to expose people to the roles that they have and the things they do and how important they are.
And I think, you know, to continue the love, the self-love aspect of this, it's to Ike and Adrian and Bob's, my partner right here, it's to their credit that the entire production team was involved in all decision-making. I'm a dramaturg. I do my research. I present it. I've been at every production meeting. I was at auditions. I've made suggestions. Mm-hmm. I gave a note to Adrian the other night at rehearsal about something Tata would say. And I feel like a valued part of that. And my point being that the attitude and the inclusiveness of the leadership of this company has trickled down to making everyone feel vital and important. And that's
That's how you create great theater, though. Like, the vision is set by the director, but after that, they kind of have to trust the people that they've put in place to
They set the tone for that trust.
They set the tone for that trust, and then they let them do their job, you know, and correct where they need to, but you know, it's not just a one person thing. It really, to create great theater, it really is collaborative.
So building off of something that we were talking about before, and to you guys, I throw this question to you guys as artists. Do you ever feel constrained by the need to make our audiences feel good? I mean, it seems like we bend over backwards, even in a show like this, which is a really great show. I mean, it's just a finely crafted piece of musical theater, and it speaks to our time. It's got wonderful roles and wonderful theatrical moments, and yet, as we're presenting it, we really feel the need to say, "Oh, but there's a feeling of hope. You're not going to get too depressed. Don't get too scared because it's a serious show."
Right.
I mean, and don't get me wrong, I will go to some place, I will go to theater or movies just to be entertained, and I enjoy that. I went to see, you know, Young Frankenstein up at Fort County and started smiling at the beginning and smiled through the whole thing. It was just a big, silly piece of fun, and that was great. But sometimes there's a place for a big, serious piece of nastiness.
Right.
I think one of the things that I react to is that's one of my favorite elements of live arts, is a lot of theaters have a niche, often in popular theater designed to put butts in the seat.
Yes.
And they do one thing and they do it very well for their audience.
Mm-hmm.
But I love about live arts the fact that the season is always diverse.
Yeah.
There's something that everybody can love, but will not necessarily be the cup of tea for every member of the audience.
Right.
And many people will go, like me, for that diversity, to find that range. And yes, it's important to come out feeling good, but not necessarily to have had a good time.
Right. Right. To be changed. That's, I mean, for me, a good night at the theater is having a visceral reaction, whatever that reaction is, having a visceral reaction to what happened in front of me. What, you know, whether I, you know, laughed until I peed or I, you know, bawled my eyes out. Like, it doesn't matter. It's the same. It's the same value to me.
And when we're talking about this show, I think we have talked about the ideas and the issues. And I think Ike and the company really would be pleased if people leave the theater not talking about the bells and whistles,
yeah,
the set and the lights and the sound and the performances and the mm-hmm. songs as much as they're talking about the ideas,
yeah,
the issues that are raised in the show.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they will leave the theater talking about the art that's
yes.
been created on stage,
yes,
because there are some incredible performances in this show.
Oh, yes.
There are extremely exciting visuals and production values to bring this show alive, and it is the whole package.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you've got some powerhouses in this cast. I mean, D'Angelo McDonald and
Jerry. You were going to say something.
Oh, it just you started your question by saying as actors or as theater makers,
as artists,
as our artists, and I'm usually an actor. That's been my primary role, and what I've learned over the years is. It's the choice of the play that begins that journey. And once the play is chosen, my job, and I think the company's job, therefore, is to be the play, to do the play mm-hmm. that was written. Once you've trusted the playwright, you have to trust what mm-hmm. he or she has put down on paper and follow where that takes you. And whether that's to a funny place or a sad place, or a disturbing place, or a place that requires thought, or a place that requires no thought. You take the play to where the playwright has taken you, has set you off.
It's also interesting in terms of the community, the company that's developed, that this cast in particular features a number of actors who are live arts regulars
that yeah.
whose names the audiences will immediately identify
yep.
and know for quality work.
Mm-hmm.
It also includes people who have had some experience but are not household names.
Yes.
And finally, there are a number of people in this show who are not live arts regulars, who
yeah.
in many cases who have never appeared on a live arts stage.
Right.
In a couple of places, including one of the leads, who has never appeared in a musical show before.
Right, right.
Just wait till y'all get a feel for Jim Cunningham
as
Cole House Walker Jr.
I've been hearing. I've been hearing.
Your jaw will drop in awe. And then,
yeah,
you take him home.
We're going to do a drop. We'll be right back on Homegrown.
This is Michael Clem. You were listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
49 minutes past the hour, and if you are just joining us, it's almost over, people. What the hell? Really? I mean, really? You couldn't set an alarm, get a cup of coffee? Like, I mean, the show's almost over. I mean, yeah, there's a podcast and all that, but I mean, come on.
I was just about to say, but you can always catch the podcast at zevopodcast.com. You're like, yeah, there's a podcast.
But like, you know.
He just cut me off.
Live is better, people. What the heck? I'm really censoring myself this morning. Anyway. All right. If you just joined us, we are talking with Jerry Schirmer and Bob Button about Ragtime, which opens on the 5th of October at Live Arts. And Jerry, you had something to share with us.
One of the questions that Clinton opened with is why this play, why now? And we've talked a lot about the unrest in Charlottesville over the last year and a half. The other side of that reason why is the story of immigration, which is obviously what I've been studying in our nation mm-hmm. then and now. I'd like to read a letter to you. I'm going to leave out some identifying comments,
right.
And then I would like the audience to think about this. This is a letter to the editor. Esteemed Mr. Editor, have pity on us, the unhappy people who are imprisoned here. Please print our letter in your worthy paper so that our American brothers may know how we are suffering. Many of us cannot return to our homeland. We are political refugees or deserters from an army. Many of us have sold everything to have enough for the passage to America. You know very well what an immigrant must do to go through before he gets to America. First of all, there are the difficulties with borders. Later, he is put on a train like a piece of luggage on the way to the port, where he lies for many days in a shed waiting for the arrival of the ship or van or truck. On the ship, every immigrant is looked on like a dog. After the torment, when with the help of God he arrives in America, he must show that he is in possession of a certain amount of money. Where is he going to get it? Who has ever heard of such a treatment of human beings? For this sort of nonsense, they have ruined the lives of so many people and deport them to the countries from which they have escaped. It would be impossible to describe everything that is taking place here. We are crammed over 1,000 people in a place where there is hardly place for 200. We are not allowed to go out for fresh air. We lie on a filthy floor. We don't have our luggage with us, and we cannot change our shirts for many weeks. People go around in despair. Everybody cries and moans. Men are kept separated from their wives and children. They can see each other only when they take us to eat. They don't let a husband talk to his wife or a father talk to his child. Many children get sick. Some are taken to hospitals. Some never come back. Today is a holiday, the 4th of July, and because of this, they don't deport anybody. But tomorrow the slaughter will start again. There are some who think of jumping into the water if they will be taken back to the boat. Dear Mr. Editor, please print. Our hope is that you will print this letter, which was written by one of our immigrants. I'd like the audience to think about when that letter was written. Was it written last week in El Paso?
Right.
No, actually it was written in 1906 by Alexander Rudnev, a Jewish immigrant on Ellis Island. How far have we come? Question to think about.
Yeah.
There you go.
And the answer is not very far, unfortunately. Yeah. So, what better time to do ragtime? Yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming and sharing the insights about this show. I know that it will be absolutely amazing because I know some of the work that's been put into it. And I cannot wait to see it. Clinton, do you have any last words?
Yeah.
I shouldn't have asked that question. Clinton always has last words. He's always got something bubbling under the surface.
You make me sound like a stew.
It's not a bad thing. Stew is good, right? Everybody likes stew.
Depends on which stew it is.
Oh, well, it is.
No, I'm good.
I love you, Clinton.
Take that.
Oh, see, now he changes it up. See, that's do you see what I deal with, people? Do you see what I deal with on a weekly basis? David, where are you? Where are you to save me?
He's at rehearsal.
Exactly. He's at rehearsal, getting ready for the nightmare day.
Of ragtime.
All right. What's coming up next? We got the Sunday morning wake-up call coming up next. Host Dan Gould and his guest.
Actually, that's not right.
That's not right?
We just have Rick Moore, and we don't know who the guests are.
Oh. Well, it'll be a surprise.
It will be a surprise.
It'll be a surprise. We like surprises. Sure. Why not? You know, we're theater people. Surprise us. Whatever. It's fine. All right. So, yeah, Sunday morning wake-up call is coming up next. And, wow.
Thank you so much for letting us come in and talk about our passion and love.
Oh, no. Of course. That's why we're here.
This is a four-month journey, and we're just reaching the climax.
How about that?
And we, like you, are anxious to see what takes place when we open on Friday.
Yes, Friday, the day after my birthday.
Bob Button, Jerry Shermer, thank you very much. Ragtime at Live Arts, opening October 5th, going on all the way to October 27th. Check it out.
Mm.
Thank you very much. This has been Homegrown, your show dedicated to local art. We'd like to thank Jerry and Bob for talking to us. Our boarding music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music was by Positive Collective. Any complaints about Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine lisping law firm of Tochterman Overman, Munson and Burke. Legal services that wrap around you like a thong.
Servitheth.
That wrap around you like a thong. Coming up next, Sunday morning wake up call. Have a nice week. See ya.
Aww.
In 1902, Father built a house at the crest of the Broadview Avenue Hill in New Rochelle, New York. And it seemed for some years thereafter that all the family's days would be warm and fair.
The skies were blue and hazy, rarely a storm, barely a chill.
Very well off. His considerable income was derived from the manufacture of fireworks and bunting and other accoutrements of patriotism. Father was also something of an amateur explorer.
The house on the hill in New Rochelle was Mother's domain. She took pleasure in making it comfortable for the men of her family and often told herself how fortunate she was to be so protected and provided for by her husband.
Mother's younger brother worked at Father's fireworks factory. He was a genius at explosives. He was also a young man in search of something to believe in. His sister wondered when he would find it.
Grandfather had been a professor of Greek and Latin. Now retired and living with his daughter and her family, he was thoroughly irritated by everything.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.